¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
From GEICO Subconscious News, I'm Tammy Racing Thoughts, broadcasting from your brain. You think you live in a pretty safe place, but you just heard about a break-in 4 miles away, which isn't close, but it isn't far either, you know? Art Palpitations is on the scene.
I sure am, Tammy, and I don't even know why I drove out here, because as you know, you got customized renter's insurance through GEICO, so your stuff is covered.
Oh, well, that's great. Any sign of crime there, Art?
Just some light littering, Tammy, but like they say, a little litter can lead to a lot.
Wise words. It feels good to worry less. It feels good to GEICO.
Without actual proof of paranormal activity, what makes a place seem haunted to you? Old, dusty furniture? Creaky doors? What about stairs that lead to nowhere? Or labyrinthian hallways that carry you far away enough from where you started that you can't find your way back again? What about a space would stop you in your tracks to ask yourself, where am I? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. I've been known to say that if I were to, God forbid, lose my family, I would yeet myself right off the planet. But recently, I was contemplating that awful scenario, and I thought, well, perhaps before Thelma and Louising myself over the Grand Canyon, I might figure out a way to go see some places in the world. Perhaps I might take whatever money I have left and go completely off the grid and travel, and once I'm done with that, I'll Control-Alt-Delete myself. But also, maybe once I'm done traveling, I could go become a monk in the mountains of Japan. And suddenly, while I was thinking of all these things I would want to do and see before I blooped off the earth, I realized that these were all things to live for. As broken-hearted as I would be to lose my loved ones, as bereft of purpose as I think it might make me feel, perhaps there are things I could do with the time I had left that would make any of it worth living. The woman behind the subject of today's episode seemed to have figured that out. After facing immeasurable loss, she picked herself up and threw herself so hard into a new hobby that the outcome remains to this day a legend. Sarah Lockwood Pardee was born into wealth in 1839 in New Haven, Connecticut. Her father, Leonard Pardee, was a manufacturer of carriages, and her mother, also Sarah, was a socialite. Sarah was one of 7 children. She was extremely bright. She spoke 4 languages, attended Young Ladies Collegiate Institute at Yale, and according to a piece about her on biography.com from 2020, she showed proficiencies in musical composition, math, and science. She was a wee little woman standing at just 4'10". Sarah married fellow rich person William Wirt Winchester in 1862. William was in his family's business of rifle manufacturing, which, as I'm sure you can imagine, during the Civil War, was big business. The couple had a child, Annie Pardee Winchester, in 1866. Sadly, baby Annie died just 5 weeks later, from marasmus, a protein disorder that prevents the body from properly digesting food. I've said this before on this show, but sometimes I think people have a tendency to downplay the enormity of losing a child in the olden days because it was so much more common. We tend to toss out statistics of high infant mortality as though it was just some accepted way of life. I'm no socioanthropologist, but I have to imagine that the trauma of losing a child has been awful since the dawn of humanity, no matter how commonplace it was at one time or another. Just because it was normal for families to lose 5 of their 10 children doesn't mean the parents didn't feel wrenched every time. And then to have to continue on with life with no real mental health support, I can't imagine the pain. And while Sarah didn't suffer losing 5 children, The loss of her one daughter was a huge tragedy in her life. She would not have another child. Whether by choice or fate, I don't know. Just 3 years later, in 1869, Sarah's father, Leonard, died. By the time of his death, he'd amassed a fortune of over $1.5 million in today money. And then, within 1 year, between May of 1880 and March of 1881, Sarah's mother, father-in-law, and her husband, who was only 43 years old, all died. Upon her husband's death, Sarah inherited his fortune of the equivalent of over $600 million in today money, as well as almost 50% of her late father's company's stock, making her the wealthiest woman in the world, earning the equivalent of more than $30,000 a day in today money. And so, in 1885, after having lost most of her family, including her infant daughter, Sarah, now single and wealthier than you or I could ever hope to be, packed up her bags and headed west to California. She bought an 8-room farmhouse near San Jose, which she named Yanada Villa, or House on Flat Land. And what she lacked in house-naming prowess, she would more than make up for in house-remodeling prowess. Sarah had family already living in the area, and some believe she bought the house with the intention of expanding it so that the family could all live together. The first member of the family to move in was Sarah's niece, Marion Merriman, who went by the extraordinarily handsome name of Daisy. Here's a really stupid and useless fact that I know. Daisy is a nickname for Margaret, from the French Marguerite, meaning either pearl or Daisy. And Marion is also a nickname of Margaret. Margaret has the most nicknames of any European feminine name. So it seems Marion Daisy Merriman swapped out one nickname, Marion, for the objectively far more superior nickname, Daisy. That was apropos of nothing, since I know so many of you love my tangents that go nowhere. You're welcome. Anyway. Sarah got right to work on renovations and expansions of the farmhouse. And when I say she got right to work, I mean she got to work. According to a piece from SF Gate in 2021, quote, she had a hard time squaring her ambitions with conventional architecture. She parted ways with several architects before deciding to start drawing up plans herself. With no professional training, it didn't always go smoothly, end quote. In a letter to her sister from 1889, Sarah wrote, quote, I am constantly having to make an upheaval for some reason. For instance, my upper hall, which leads to the sleeping apartment, was rendered so unexpectedly dark by a little addition that after a number of people had missed their footing on the stairs, I decided that safety demanded something to be done, end quote. Someone else might have put another light in the stairwell or perhaps a tasteful little sign that read, mind the step, but Sarah was not someone else. Sarah's solution was to tear it down and redo it. And tear it down and redo it she did, beyond what your average industrious dad on HGTV ever would. Strangers, mealtime can be a slog. Figuring out what to make is one whole thing, but making sure you have clean, healthy proteins is another. With ButcherBox, I'm always stocked with my family's favorite proteins, so dinner doesn't have to be a question mark. I'm a big fan of ButcherBox's seafood. Their salmon is delicious, and fish tacos are a big hit in my house with their panko-crusted cod. And I know I'm eating seafood that isn't pumped full of preservatives and other gross stuff. ButcherBox delivers over 100 premium protein options straight to your door, including 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, crate-free pork, and wild-caught seafood. It's all responsibly raised and thoughtfully sourced, so you're not guessing about what's on your plate. For over a decade, ButcherBox has led the industry with meat and seafood that's antibiotic-free, hormone-free, and independently verified. Because when it comes to fueling your body, quality isn't extra, it's everything. Clean, whole protein means better support for strength, metabolism, and that steady all-day energy we're chasing. As an exclusive offer, new listeners can get their choice between free sirloin tips, ground beef, or chicken wings in every box for life. Plus, $20 off when you go to butcherbox.com/unexplained. That's right, your choice of free sirloin tips, ground beef, or chicken wings in every box for life. Plus, $20 off your first box and free shipping always. That's butcherbox.com/unexplained. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Listen, some people take up painting, others needle pointing, but Sarah's outlet for her depression was her newfound passion for architecture and design. Or, as writer and historian Mary Jo Ignoffo put it in her 2010 book, Captive of the Labyrinth, Sarah L. Winchester, Heiress to the Rifle Fortune, quote, Sarah had learned that architectural and interior design was a potent remedy for depression and grief. In the years to come, she would often turn to the curative powers of work to restore physical and emotional well-being, end quote. While Sarah had no background or training in architecture, engineering, or design, she'd grown up around carpenters and woodworkers, according to Ignoffo, and so she, quote, sought out the expertise of hired carpenters, end quote. She drew the plans, instructed the builders, and subscribed to architecture journals. Quote, if the result did not measure up to her expectations, she had it torn down and rebuilt or discontinued, only to resume a completely different and previously abandoned project, end quote. In another letter, Sarah wrote, quote, for one reason or another, since I started to make alterations in my house, I have not been able to get anything like settled. In the first place, it is infinitely more difficult to get work done than it would be in New Haven, end quote. Yeah, girl, you're traumatized, and so you're putting your focus on something else so the grief doesn't consume you. I get it. I've done it. I once got married and divorced just to not deal with my trauma. She continued, quote, over a year ago, I took out a wall and put in a skylight. Then I had to have plastering done, and as that could not well be done in the heat which succeeded, I had to wait for cooler weather. This spring, I recalled the carpenters, hoping to get my hall finished up. Then came the necessity for an irrigating plant, and this required much work of the carpenters so that they could not get at the hall. Then came the need for other outside work, which must be done before the fall rain would interfere. Rain, revealed to my dismay, leaks in the new skylight, and so it goes, end quote. And yes, so it does go, often with construction, that your original estimate of 6 months becomes 18 months and twice the original cost. But also, this is why one should not handle design and engineering if one is not trained to do so. Also, why on earth did she need an irrigating plant? What's going on in there? According to a piece in House Beautiful from 2023, quote, it is believed that within a few months of buying the home, she had already added more than a dozen rooms so that her two younger sisters and their families could live with her, end quote. I don't know by whom this is believed, but it's not me. You couldn't pay me to live somewhere where a dozen rooms had been built in a few months. The article continues, quote, she also had it put on a floating foundation, which protected it from total destruction from the earthquakes of 1906 and 1989, end quote. Apparently, Sarah continued construction during the Depression of 1893, and the piece in SFGate notes that some thought she was being wasteful, while some historians say that, quote, by continuing construction, she was able to keep locals employed. In her unusual way, it was an act of kindness, end quote. Keeping people employed? Why, I never! Purchasing building materials? How dare she! I guarantee you, if she'd been a dude, no one would have commented on the alleged wastefulness of continuing construction on his own house. In fact, according to the Smithsonian, Sarah, quote, built her house with shifts of 16 carpenters who were paid three times the going rate and worked 24 hours a day, every day. Unlike many homes at the time, Sarah had hot water and forced air central heating installed in the house. She also had hydraulic elevators and shallow steps on the staircases to accommodate her arthritis. There were all kinds of innovative engineering details throughout the house. Oh, to be rich and process your trauma through home renovations. The entire third floor of the house was dedicated to living spaces for her servants and carpenters and their families. A slight tilt was designed in the north conservatory so that runoff from watering the plants would be directed to a specific spot for collections. She built one of the first standing showers, and it might be the first private building that contained an Otis elevator. For more on elevators, see Strange and Unexplained Season 1, Episode 3, Elevators, Terror and Death in a 6x6-foot Car. I guess no one really knows how many iterations of the interior there were during Sarah's tenure. According to a piece from Psychology Today on the Winchester House and other haunted places from 2018, at one point there were, quote, supposedly 500 rooms, more than 10,000 windows, and dozens of fireplaces and stairways, end quote. However, the official Winchester Mystery House website lists the stats thusly: 24,000 square feet, 10,000 windows, 2,000 doors, 160 rooms, 52 skylights, 47 stairways and fireplaces, 17 chimneys, 13 bathrooms, 6 kitchens. Built at the price tag of $5 million in 1923, or $71 million today. That's a lot of fireplaces. Despite the floating foundation, the house sustained major damage in the earthquake of 1906. The quake, which registered a 7.8 on the Richter scale, destroyed the seven-story tower and everything above the third floor. According to Captive of the Labyrinth, Ignafo's biography of Sarah, quote, "Yanata Village was severely damaged. The seven-story tower tumbled in a heap, leaving a gaping hole at about the third level. Shingles, wood, and glass collapsed into rooms on the lower level. Most of the several chimneys fell, either to the ground or through roofs. The third and fourth floor additions were wrecked. An entire wing of New England-style porches lay in ruins, and three Tudor turrets broke to bits. All the painstaking plasterwork that Winchester had described in such detail to her sister-in-law crumbled beyond repair. 20 years of meticulous wood and tile craftsmanship were destroyed by the devastating trembler." End quote. Not only did the earthquake damage the house, but it apparently damaged Sarah's will and ambition to continue the passion project. Beyond ensuring the structure was still safe, she never rebuilt what was lost. She never repaired the damage to the north wing and chose instead to live in the west wing of the house. I mean, it was still sprawling and gigantic, so it's not like she was confined to a couple rooms. After the construction on the damage was complete, quote, "second story doors opened out to thin air where was once a balcony, and water pipes protruded where window boxes had been. Staircases leading to the upper floors were left intact, even though whole levels were swept into the rubbish heap." According to Daisy's husband, Fred Marriott, Winchester herself thought the post-earthquake house looked as though it had been built by a crazy person, end quote. And it is because of this stranger that the house still stands today and has taken on a life of its own. Rumors of haunting and weird stuff going on in the Winchester House began as early as 1908, just 2 years after the earthquake that shook its foundation. A piece in the San Francisco Examiner claimed, quote, "Mrs. Winchester, now a woman of 50 years and of feeble health, is an avowed spiritualist. The story goes that years ago she consulted a celebrated medium and was told she would live as long as she remained within the walls of her beautiful palace, and that palace remained unfinished in its construction. Whether that story is true or not, certain it is that for 7 years Mrs. Winchester never left the confines of her mansion on the Los Gatos Road and denied herself to all callers," end quote. The piece claims, quote, "shortly after her arrival in San Jose, Mrs. Winchester is said to have received a message from the spirit world that she should build a mansion, and that should the sound of a hammer or any tools of iron ever cease, she would die," end quote. Of course, we know from her letter that she ceased construction for months due to weather. The same article claimed that Sarah had a nervous breakdown after the earthquake of 1906. I mean, if anyone deserved to have a nervous breakdown, I'd say it was Sarah. Gal had been through a lot. A piece from the San Francisco Chronicle from 1911 also claimed there was a mysterious prayer room in the house, which, quote, Mrs. Winchester has allowed no one to enter. Here she received messages from the spirits, end quote. And also this, quote, Mrs. Winchester is said to have observed the imprint of a man's hand one day on a dusty water pipe. Fearing a bomb, she ordered the cellar closed with three separate locks, end quote. It seems pretty obvious, however, that none of the information stated in these articles came from Sarah herself. Whether they were making it up whole cloth or relying on gossip, I don't know, but in the 1908 San Francisco Examiner piece, they claimed that Sarah had sold the property, which obviously proved false. And the author of that piece even admitted to not having any actual verified information, saying, quote, the story of the sale is so far only a well-defined report backed up by circumstantial evidence, end quote. And yet, they printed it as though it were fact. It makes you wonder how much else of their reporting was only backed up by circumstantial evidence. This lady has lots of money and doesn't seem to like to hang out with people. Therefore, she is crazy and talks to ghosts. Sarah Winchester died in her home on September 5, 1922, at the age of 83. Her will stipulated that the house be sold, as none of her relatives would be able to afford to maintain it. Girl, no one would be able to afford to maintain that thing. Indeed, there was such little interest in the property that, according to the Winchester Mystery House website, the 60-acre property got divided up for sale in smaller pieces. However, House Beautiful says that the property was sold at auction for just over $2 million in today money. What is known is that in 1923, a couple named John and Mamie Brown leased the house with the goal of turning the property into a tourist attraction, complete with a roller coaster, carousel, and pool. But they quickly realized those things are expensive, so they switched to advertising the property as just sort of like a cool place to hang, with, quote, dancing, good eats, games, and picnic grounds, end quote. But many picnicking revelers wanted to see the inside of the house, so the Browns began offering tours. On June 30th, 1923, Mamie guided the first ever tour of the Winchester house. Opening day drew 10,000 people. In fact, it is thanks to the Browns that the house remains standing today. By deciding to show the house to visitors, they maintained and preserved the house so that eventually it became a national landmark. According to a piece on Mental Floss from 2022, Houdini's visit to the house was in October 1924 while he was out on his paranormal and spiritualism debunking tour. He was invited to the house by a student at San Jose State University who had once volunteered in one of Houdini's shows and who was, by then, the tour guide at the house. Houdini never gave a detailed summary of his visit. He is said to have sought out specific rooms that were believed to have high levels of spiritual disturbance and was impressed by the Byzantine layout of the home, but a detailed investigation never occurred because the performer had other pressing engagements. By the 30s, advertisements were running, dubbing it the Winchester Mystery House. In 1974, the house became a state historic landmark and was placed on the National Register of Historic Places. In 1990, the city of San Jose named it as a city landmark. And of course, where there is a maze-like, sprawling Victorian-era mansion and unsubstantiated newspaper articles claiming the crazy lady who built it talked to ghosts, there are all kinds of ghost stories, which we'll lend a skeptical ear to after the break. The The ghost stories associated with the Winchester Mystery House became so common that the entry for the house in the National Register of Historic Places includes this, quote, William Winchester died on March 7, 1881, after which Mrs. Winchester, upset at the deaths of her husband and daughter, reportedly consulted a spiritualist. This medium informed Mrs. Winchester that the victims killed by the Winchester rifles her family manufactured were seeking revenge by taking the lives of her family. The spiritualist also conveyed to Mrs. Winchester that the spirits had placed a curse on her and that if she wished to live, she must appease them by moving out west and constantly, without ceasing, build a house for them, night and day, end quote. It is unclear where this information came from. However, in her biography, Captive of the Labyrinth, Ignafo acknowledges this likelihood, saying, quote, as it did to countless other mid-19th century mothers who lost babies to infant mortality, the loss cut Sarah deeply. Religious beliefs typical of the time asserted that God condemned infants to eternal damnation because they had not grown to be baptized. The concept of infant damnation was anathema to young women coming of age after the Civil War. They sought out an image of a god as a loving parent rather than a wrathful prosecutor. Mothers of lost infants at this period were likely to search for spiritual connection with the deceased, end quote. But Ignafo also points to a passage in another book, this one by a woman named Susie Smith, titled Prominent American Ghosts, in which Smith claims Sarah visited a medium in Boston named Adam Coons. However, Ignafo goes on to say that records of Boston at the time show no medium named Adam Coons, nor was Adam Coons mentioned in any article of Banner of Light, the most prominent spiritualist magazine in Boston from that time. But it is really tempting to believe Sarah was driven by the threat of the ghosts of the people murdered by her late husband's rifles. And indeed, these rumors began before she died. Newspapers called her mad and guilt-ridden, and couldn't seem to wrap their heads around why she would spend her time and money in this way. It's actually weird how mad people seemed about it. Like, she literally wasn't hurting anyone. She was keeping people employed and supporting the economy. It was her money. I mean, it's not like she ran some international child sex trafficking ring. A piece from All That's Interesting from 2022 leans in hard to the idea that Sarah's intention was to stay ahead of the ghosts, saying, quote, in an effort to confuse any ghosts hoping to contact her directly, Sarah Winchester added several unusual touches. Staircases that ended abruptly, windows that opened to interior rooms, doorways that opened to several story drops, and hallways that appeared to go nowhere before circling back onto themselves, end quote. Again, it's unclear where they got their information, and there doesn't seem to be any kind of record in which Sarah confirmed that her motivation was outrunning ghosts. We know it didn't come from her diaries found after her death. She didn't seem to keep any that anyone was aware of. And don't forget, the rumors started long before she died. But who are the ghosts that people claim to have encountered inside Sarah's maze of grief? According to the Winchester Mystery House website, there is a ghost that has been seen working on the fireplace and pushing around a wheelbarrow full of ash or coal, and, quote, longtime maintenance worker Denny reports that one morning, after entering the water tower, he heard the patter of footsteps above. He ascended to let the trespasser know the three-story structure was off limits. But the footsteps always seemed to be one step ahead of him and one floor above. His search culminated on the roof, with no one in sight, end quote. Most common sightings, it should come as no surprise, are shadows, quote, roaming around corners, down long hallways, and appearing in windows, end quote. A former marketing director for the house took a photo in 2015 and caught what the website claims, quote, appears to be a human-shaped apparition looking out on the front gardens. What do you think? Ghostly figure or reflection of the clouds, end quote. According to the Sarah Winchester piece on biography.com, a former caretaker named Klaus is said to roam the halls to this day. There is also a man with a mustache at the bottom of the stairs wearing old-fashioned overalls. Handymen report feeling taps on their shoulders, but no one is behind them when they turn around. On the third floor, people say they hear their name, but there is no one there. The official website has this story from the house historian Janin Bohm, whose great-uncle had worked for Sarah. Quote, "Early one Sunday morning, I was alone on the estate with one janitor who was sweeping the parking lot in preparation for the day's visitors. She heard footsteps on the roof while watering some plants. I quickly looked up as there was a huge pyramidal glass skylight directly above me. Of course, I saw nobody and convinced myself that it had probably been a raccoon or some other animal. A few minutes later, the footsteps were back. Not even thinking, I ran at top speed up a nearby staircase, taking the most direct route to the roof access over the conservatory. It couldn't have taken me more than 6 seconds to get up to the third floor that commanded a full view of the conservatory roof. As you've probably guessed, it was completely empty. I walked the entire perimeter on the flat-roofed area to make sure nobody had fallen. There was nothing to be seen." End quote. According to Psychology Today, the house, quote, is reputed to be the most haunted house in the world. It allegedly houses more than 1,000 different ghosts, end quote. One doctor quoted in the article had this to say, quote, "One of the main reasons why we think that older places are more likely to be haunted is simply because there's been much more time for tragic things to have taken place. Stimuli such as moldy odors, antiquated Victorian or Gothic architecture, wood interiors and old portraits on the wall reinforce an ambiance of great age and make the place seem creepier." Meanwhile, the History Channel website has this to say, quote, "Psychological phenomena like pareidolia and confirmation bias explain why people may perceive ghosts, find meaning or patterns where none exist, and reinforce supernatural beliefs they may already have," end quote. And such is a strange phenomena we encounter time and time again on this podcast. Can we really trust our radar for ghosts if we pay to enter a mansion advertised to have them? In her biography of Sarah, Mary Jo Ignoffo suggests that perhaps the constant construction was designed to keep unwanted guests away, though not the paranormal kind. In a letter Sarah wrote to her sister-in-law, she said, quote, "Although I am sufficiently settled to allow a small family to live quite comfortably, I am not so saturated yet as to feel that I can make invited guests as comfortable as to justify me in giving pressing invitations. I hope someday to get so situated that I shall feel that it would not be an imposition to my friends to invite them to visit me." End quote. LOL. I love this. Yeah, my house is huge and you'd think I'd be inviting lots of people to come visit, but like it's super loud and messy with all the construction, so you know, I just can't. Sorry. A piece on Medium from 2018 sees the weird eccentricities of the house this way. Quote, "There's also a lot to be said about how so many of the mysteries of the house are simply conveniences and comforts for an old woman. It's not strange, not weird, just not built for the ableds. The narrow passages, the low ceiling, the winding ramps and shallow steps, the three elevators, the many fireplaces, warmth soothes arthritis, the very low shower, the myriad skylights and solars, all of this paints a portrait of a tiny old woman who is admittedly eccentric and very into architecture and keen to experiment with all the latest trends. But above all, she built for herself and no one else." End quote. The History Channel refreshingly factors in history in its take on Sarah, citing her past as an intelligent woman who proved resilient and rich enough after facing a horrifying period of loss to build such a remarkable place. Within it, she likely just desired space and privacy. Quote, "The house was never designed to confuse spirits, but to accommodate her evolving ideas, her health needs, and her aesthetic tastes. Its odd features are mostly the result of earthquake damage, remodeling interruptions, or later additions made after her death to enhance the mystery," end quote. Sarah Winchester suffered so much loss, it's almost inconceivable. What's not inconceivable is that she took her money and dipped out. Who can blame her? I mean, newspaper men of her day absolutely did blame her. They could not fathom why a woman of endless means would want to remain hidden away. For what good is a woman, after all, if we cannot see her? The Winchester House website reminds visitors that aside from the personal loss she suffered, Sarah also witnessed the devastating effects and aftermath of the Civil War, in which thousands of families lost beloved sons and fathers. And she lived through the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918. A graphic they released in March of 2020 said this: "This is Sarah Winchester. Sarah practiced social distancing for over 38 years. Sarah spent her time designing and constructing a 160-room mansion with oddities at every turn. Sarah kept busy. Be like Sarah." And while historian Mary Jo Ignafo may have poo-pooed the idea that Sarah might have been carrying tremendous guilt over the way her wealth was gained, I don't think we should be so quick to dismiss it. The Winchester repeating rifle was the deadliest firearm at the time of its invention. It was incredibly popular. The action on the rifle was far quicker than the single-firing rifles that came before it. It is largely credited with allowing white people to clear out the land they wanted from the people already living there as westward expansion laid waste to hundreds of thousands of native people. It also helped decimate the buffalo. There was a book written about it in the 50s titled Winchester, The Gun That Won the West. Ignafo wonders if people would attribute this sense of guilt to Sarah if her money had been made through sewing machines instead of rifles. After all, she says, how many garment workers died in sewing factories? But this is a false equivalence. Sewing machines are not weapons of war. Rifles have one purpose, and the Winchester rifle carried out its purpose with staggering success. So perhaps Sarah wasn't running from literal ghosts of the people killed for her profit, but rather from her guilt at knowing her profit came from those killings. Perhaps the reality of where her wealth came from hit her and propelled her into seclusion and into an eccentric hobby. But I think if Sarah had been a man, no one would have looked twice. The transformation of the 8-room farmhouse into a sprawling property with engineering and technological wonders would have been hailed as a triumph. His seclusion would have been justified. What wealthy man wouldn't want to guard his wealth and keep away the riffraff? He would have been celebrated for keeping so many people employed during awful economic times. I guarantee you, no one would have called him crazy. But Sarah was the kind of person that the gossip mill is made for. Unconventional, eccentric, wealthy, and reclusive. And so, of course, people gossiped, and newspaper men reported completely unsubstantiated rumors as fact. And now, here we are, a century later, and Sarah's house is somehow one of the most haunted places in the world. In 2005, San Jose Rep commissioned a musical based on Sarah's story. According to SFGate, the playwright was given, quote, considerable freedom to simply make up Sarah's story, positing a house full of ghosts, a flying little girl, a reformed whore, a sheriff and his deputy, an Indian scout, and at the heart of it all, a notorious gunslinger named Jack Kerrigan, who makes a particular point of bedeviling Mrs. Winchester. The play also has elements of drawing room farce, with ghosts bolting in and out of the many doors in William Bloodgood's intricate tri-level set, bumping their heads on the stairway to the ceiling. Baumler calls it a comedy and a ghost story and a romance, end quote. Because the real story would make for a pretty bleak and depressing musical. A one-woman gray gardens where instead of letting the house fall apart, the protagonist just continually renovates it. Who would want to see that? It's much more exciting to imagine ghosts and goblins behind every weird, tight, low-ceilinged corner. Perhaps the only ghosts haunting us are the ones we conjure up to sell papers, while the actual dead are too busy sleeping. Next time on Strange and Unexplained, for the first time ever, we will be running an episode written by a listener. It's the fascinating story of the Carol A. Deering ghost ship. Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment and Grab Bag Collab. This episode was written by me, Daisy Egan, with research by Keely Hies, editorial help from Becca DiGregorio, and sound mixing and design by Becca DiGregorio. If you have an idea for a topic we should cover, you can now email us at contact@strangeandunexplainedpod.com. Or you can head over to the website, strangeandunexplainedpod.com, and fill out the contact form. For about $5 a month, you can listen early and ad-free at grabbagcollab.com, where you can also subscribe to my other two podcasts, Dear Daisy and Shut the F Up, Nick Lachey, as well as Amber Hunt's Crimes of the Centuries, Tales from the Resistance, The Catalyst, and What If They're Wrong. We also run quarterly shows with new content all the time. It's like a one-stop shop for all your podcasting needs. There's so much great content over at GrabBag, and you'll be supporting a small, profit-share, woman and non-binary-owned business. Or you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts for early and ad-free Strange and Unexplained, and the occasional bonus content. Whether you subscribe or not, remember to subscribe on the main feed and download and leave us a quick 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. Stay strange.